Welcome to Human Signal. I'm your host, Dr. Tobias Floyd. Today, we have a dynamic show. We have two fantastic people. One is a friend from way back, and another one is a new friend. I always love making new connections and meeting new people and learning new things. Let me introduce our guest. I'm a Southerner, ladies first. So we have Colonel Kathy Swasina. She is a retired U.S. Army colonel with a 30-year career in the U.S. military, leading multi-million dollar operations and informational technology programs. Kathy retired at the rank of not light bird, full bird colonel. Promotable to general now, that's important. She's currently serving as the chief information officer at Sherpa Works, where she provides technical strategy as a member of the executive team. She is also the chairperson for advocacy at HISPE Project Cerebellum, which is a think tank where she contributes to the ethical development of artificial intelligence. Kathy is also an expert in defense networks and change management, and she successfully led the Army Reserve Network and data center consolidations. She is an International Strategic Technology Board member and a trusted advisor, my friend. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you. Thank you, Blake.
Our second guest today is a wonderful new friend that I've met through Kathy, Ty Lambeau. He is a visionary author. He is a serialpreneur who has pioneered the roles of virtual CISO and CAIO. Ty currently serves as the founder and the chief artificial intelligence officer at Holistic Information Security Practitioner Institute. His mission at HISPE is to focus on closing the cybersecurity talent and diversity gap. He is also founder and chief technology officer at Cloud Assurance, a platform recognized for providing the industry first risk intelligence security rating service, with a background that includes finding e-fortresses and being recognized as a Gartner Cool Vendor. Ty brings a truly holistic approach to information security, governance, and compliance. Welcome, Ty.
Oh, thanks for having me, Dr. Floyd. It's just an honor and a privilege to share this platform with you. And Kathy, thanks for such an amazing introduction. Thank you.
I'm going to ask some very pointed questions to get your story out, because I think we have some real dynamic points and a lot of nuggets that people will be glad to take home. Let's dive into it. I'm just going to ease us into this conversation like I'm driving my father's old Econo line, stick shift in the column. You have to ease off the clutch when you get ready to start driving. The focus of this segment, I want to talk about the why, the existential risk, and are we doomed? Ty, looking at the landscape, we have trillion-dollar companies racing to release models that hallucinate and manipulate users. Let's cut through the noise with this. If we continue on this current trajectory without a holistic control layer, I think we're doomed. What are your thoughts?
I have to answer that question as an optimist rather than a pessimist. So I would say not yet. We're not doomed yet, but we can be doomed. I think we have an opportunity to not slow down the AI race, but we have the opportunity to put the guardrails in place to avoid being doomed. So that's why I would prefer to say not yet. There's hope.
There's hope. You're saying, do you feel like there's a narrow modicum of hope, or is it a broad hope?
It's getting narrower and narrower as the race intensifies. Using your analogy, you're going 200 miles an hour and you're still trying to fix the brakes. The closer you are to that crash point, which could be a dead end, the higher your chances of being doomed, pretty much.
So risk is associated with safety. If I can say this, are we driven by profit? The ROI, the return on investment, trying to make this AI profitable, but also companies are scrambling to understand the landscape and to claim territory. I think about the movement out west. Everyone was racing to try to stake their claim. But you bring up a good point too about, yes, yeah, so it's like we're moving 200 miles per hour. An analogy I like to use is the safety belt with the three-point harness. There are different types of safety belts, but the law says that a safety belt for consumer automobiles must be a three-point safety harness. But we look at race car driving. I know Formula is very popular right now. We have those five-point safety harnesses. So, Kathy, what are your thoughts? Do you think it's all about the type of safety belt? Do you think people would slow down if they had a better safety belt, like in Formula E, would they have the inclination to drive faster?
Yeah, I think we've got to look at our safety belts, but it comes down to risk tolerance and how much risk an agency, organization, industry partner is willing to take. So the 5 points safety belt would be optimal, putting those kinds of safety rollover bars, 5 point harness, things like that, are designed to keep the human safe. When you go down to a 3 point harness, you're taking some risk. And so how much risk and risk tolerance are we willing to take?
You bring up a fantastic point, and I want to flesh that out just a little bit. When you talk about risk, and when I'm hearing the word risk, my brain is saying minimum viable product. That if you understand how the safety belt got into the insurance game, the safety is just the minimum viable product that was most profitable for the auto industry that didn't cut into profits. But we know there's a better harness, which is the 5 point harness, but we're just going to give just enough to have people have consciously click. If everyone clicks, then everyone drives safer. What does that look like kinetically? Because you've commanded military networks, right? And you know what kinetic failure looks like. In my opinion, boardrooms are treating AI like a productivity toy. And you look at the gap between those models, how little control companies actually have. Does that scare you?
Yes, it does. We shouldn't give up command and control to the computers. We've got to keep a human in the loop. And AI is a tool. It applies physics and math to problems as opposed to morality and ethics, which is where the human comes in. AI agents are fine for mundane and repeatable tasks or mathematical calculations, but humans need to be involved in decisions, in the final decision-making, because it could be a life or death situation, in which case humans bring emotion and ethics into the decision as opposed to just a mathematical calculation.
Wow. Great point. Ty, you got anything to add?
Very well said. The human in the loop is important at every stage of the AI life cycle. So if you think about the ITIL model for any service, right, there's the strategy, which is the first phase or stage, and then there's the design, and then there's the, I'm struggling to remember what that next one is. I passed the test. There's the pre-production. Transition, and then operation. They use very weird terminologies, but it's transition from design to operation, and then operation, and then continual service improvement. The human in the loop needs to be involved from the strategy phase. If you wait till the operation stage or the transition stage, it's probably too late. Things will go wrong eventually. So I'll say early human in the loop. So you have to add the E to it.
Right.
To make it.
I totally agree.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here. So I'm hearing holistic. I'm hearing whole person. We can start that whole argument to talk about, okay, a corporation is a person, et cetera, et cetera. That was said and done a couple of years ago. We understand that. But when we hear touchy-feely, my sociology background, social scientist, when corporations, I'm just playing devil's advocate now. I'm not, don't tread on me, Kathy. I know your CIO and that C-suite. What I'm hearing is all this control and all of this touchy-feely and thinking about humanity. This is not profitable. It's just going to slow me down and complicate our release and causes more problems. Is there a solution to the chaos?
I think there is. And going back to the car analogy, We don't have to stomp on the brakes, but I think we need to press on them a little bit. We see a light coming and it might be changing to yellow, so we want to press on the brakes a little bit. Speeding forward into trying to be first to market with an AI tool or system isn't necessarily the way to go. Putting on the brakes a little bit, looking, making sure that you've got the guide rails on, and doing all the things and your due diligence in the development is a must. It's just good business.
Great point. Good business. I wish so many other executives had that outlook and that viewpoint. And I know you all are doing a dynamic job, including that in that inclusive and intensive training at the Institute, trying to wrangle in the chaos. And as we get ready to close this segment out, and we're going to talk about in our next segment, the solutions to the chaos, I want everyone who's listening today to keep that top of mind, the things that we talked about today. We use the analogy of safety with the 3-point safety harness. We use the analogy of racing, trying to get finished. And I'm of the opinion that sometimes maybe we don't need to be first. This is not Ricky Bobby. If you're not first, you're last. This is maybe we need to be a very cautious second mover like Apple. And especially when we're talking about AI and agentic AI and models. That's what China's doing. That's a whole another conversation. But I just want everyone to have top of the mind as we move this conversation forward in our second segment when we're talking about the how. And we're going to be talking about projects and the solution to the chaos. So we're into the second segment with our illustrious guest today here at Human Signal. We have the Colonel and we have Ty with a HISPE. We talked about in our first segment safety, regulation, and the need. And now we're going to talk about the solution to the chaos, the how. And we're going to really start tearing into Project Cerebellum. All right. So, Ty, I want you to lead off on Project Cerebellum. This is the part, and we're talking about the part of the brain. This is just me, how I make an analogy. The part of the brain that keeps you from falling over, right? Gives you balance. Somebody used to joke me, my mom, when I was younger, saying that your baby got a heavy head. So your baby keep falling over when you're trying to walk.
I probably am the best person to talk about balance because I am so prone to like injury, falling and hurting myself, but I'll try. It's a very, I would say without that, us human beings would be just a clumsy mess. That's what I call it. It's what keeps us balanced just from a physical standpoint, biological standpoint, and neurological standpoint. With Project Cerebellum, we believe that AI should cause no harm. And when we mean harm, we mean unintended consequences. And we believe it should enhance the quality of human life. The how is we have an AI governance framework called the Trusted AI Model. So it's called TAIM, T-A-I-M. The TAIM is a framework based on different international standards and U.S. standards, as well as regulations, private AI, responsible AI principles. There are about 7 we've harmonized from across the globe. We also map to state regulations and security standards like the NIST Cybersecurity Framework, HIPAA, PCI, SOC 2, the EU AI Act, the EU GDPR, which is the privacy law that has very stringent penalty. I think it's 4% of your global revenue if you're found wanting. As regards EU GDPR, the EU AI Act is relatively new, so we haven't seen much enforcement yet. So we're taking all these global, not only US standards, but global standards, including 7 ISO standards, including ISO 42001, which is the first AI management system standard that companies and organizations could actually get certified against. So the whole idea is to bring everybody together under this trusted AI model. So if you go to our website, we actually have a diagram that shows the different layers of trusted AI. Governance, risk management, at the heart of that is trust. We leverage the standards like ISO 42001, ISO 24028 for that. And then we also look at lifecycle processes, right? So it's not just enough to address the risk, but you have to address the lifecycle of that AI system from infancy or from strategy to pretty much the improvement process to make that AI system more, you know, better. So if you go to our website, projectcerebellum.com, you can see all the history and the what we do and how we do it. But I'll say one of the things that we really want to advocate for is for everyone that is involved in this AI ecosystem to be part of the solution, right? So AI is both a threat and an opportunity. It's a very powerful tool, but it could also be weaponized, right, against us as humans, whether it's bad actors, whether it's the AI systems themselves malfunctioning, producing unintended consequences, or bad actors exploiting the data that they've been trained on. Garbage in, garbage out. What you put in is pretty much what you get out of it. So the AI systems don't have a moral compass, typically.
Right.
And I really don't know how you can build a moral compass into an AI system. Maybe they'll come up with their own religion at some point that would determine what that moral compass looks like. But hopefully it doesn't conflict with our own prevailing religions across the globe. I say all that to say, or lack of it, so nothing against people who don't have any particular beliefs. But we all have one thing that kind of helps us set values of what things, what's the limit? How far would we go? Where's the line? What lines wouldn't we cross? AI systems typically don't have that moral compass. So the human has to be in the loop. And so one of the ways we're positioning the trusted AI model, as well as the trusted AI model score, TAME score, is to allow you to measure where you are in that risk management journey. Hopefully that gives you, at least at a very high level, what Project Cerebellum is doing.
Talk to me about how can listeners get involved? Do you have any certifications? And then training?
Yes.
Talk to us about that.
Great question. The first thing is to at least just download our work products. We have open source, and we'll call it crowdsourced and open source work products. Everything we do is free. It's volunteer-based. I volunteer a significant amount of my time leading the harmonization working group. So the first thing is just to go to the website, watch, I think, two or three videos on our website, including an interview that Kathy did with Marina Alvarez with AFSEA. I think it was an AFSEA TechNet, so AFSEA Indo-Pacific in Hawaii. So they were interviewed by, I think it was FedGov at the time. So obviously watch those things, download the material, and then join us if you feel like, you know, our vision and our mission, which is pretty much safe, secure, responsible, trustworthy AI through harmonization. If you feel like that resonates with you, join us. So you can go to the website. We require maybe one to 2 hours commitment a month to participate in our monthly meeting and then do follow-ups, action items after that. But if you want to actually learn how to use the tool, the TAME score, which is a free tool, community tool, we also have workshops. So we've been doing workshops once a month. We started in December. So we've had one in December, one in January. We're having another one in exactly 2 weeks' time. By the time the podcast comes out, we'll probably be running a workshop. So join one of those workshops. It's a half-day workshop. I promise you that it's definitely going to be worth your while, because one of the things we simulate in the workshop is a real-world AI risk management assessment. I'm not going to give it away, but we use a real-world example of how you can assess an AI system hosted in AWS GovCloud, specifically. So a system that is supposed to be high security, high regulatory, meets high regulatory standards, etc., like FedRAMP. But the results of the assessment using our platform is actually fairly shocking.
So you are using real scenarios, not made up scenarios, real scenarios that happen.
Yes.
We're training. As the military would say, live fire.
Absolutely.
Ground training.
Absolutely. It's a hands-on workshop. So folks would be divided into breakout groups. It's all virtual through Zoom. And so, yeah, but it's real world. It's very hands-on with walking through the framework and the incidents that we map our controls to, because we have a top 20 controls. So we explain the thinking behind those top 20 controls, but the workshop actually gives you a real world practical example. We're actually leveraging AI. I'm not going to give it away, so I'll stop at that point, to assess that company. So I would say, if you like everything on the website and you've maybe downloaded our material from the download section, the next step will be sign up for the next workshop or bring one in-house to your organization. You could even start saying, okay, I want to complete the workshop. I want to become a TameScore assessor. You actually get a certificate issued by HSP. But we're also coming up with a trainer program where you can actually start hosting your own workshops, either publicly or privately, hybrid, on-premise, or virtual.
Do you issue CEUs, continuing education units?
Great question. We issue 6, and we're actually getting that approved. Hopefully by the end of this month, we'll get it approved. But because HSP is an educational institute, we're actually allowed to issue CEUs or CPEs. Yeah. But we're getting it approved independently.
So your organization, you throw in groups and C-suite leaders into the Kobayashi Maru.
Well said. I couldn't have said it better, Dr. Floyd. Very well said.
For those who are not trickies out there, the Kobayashi Maru is the no-win scenario. It's a great learning tool. Yeah, see how you're making decisions under high stress and get an understanding about everyone. Speaking of high stress, I still want to talk about the TAM score. And forgive me, because I'm hearing a little bit, but my brain is saying, is that like the credit score for the AI apocalypse? How can we distinguish that signal from noise in a vendor?
Okay, so great question. You're asking just brilliant questions. I wouldn't say it's a credit score. It's more like a Dun & Bradstreet score. So you remember back in the day where for you to be a federal government contractor to register on SAM.gov, you needed a DNB number. And the DNB number just proves that you are a real company because they've already done their due diligence. They checked your registration details. They've looked at the history of the company, maybe some of your financials, and then they give you a rating. That's really how we're trying to position the TAME score. Having said that, we're not trying to rate AI systems per se, because the system itself is just a tool. It's how you use that tool. So if somebody judges me based on, I'm terrible at DIY, so I hire people to do my lawn, right? Because I'm afraid I'm going to actually injure myself. When I see folks driving those lawnmowers, I'm like, if I try to do that once, I'll probably end up in a ditch or something just because I'm going to push the limit. So I hire somebody. My risk management, risk appetite, risk tolerance says it's not safe for me to do it. But can you really judge me by the state of the art lawnmower that I use? If let's say I do my own lawn. No, I still need to know how to use it safely and securely. So it's the same way. The best way to use the tool is not so much to say, is that LLM or Gen AI system bad or good? It's your use of the system. So we're actually judging the use cases in a way you are self-judging your use case for that AI system. So it's use case by use case, as opposed to algorithm or an AI model, even though we call it the trusted AI model. The whole idea is to shift the responsibility to the user of that AI system, hence the focus on use case. You can still use it to assess the model or the algorithm or the LLM. You can still do that, but it's a shared responsibility. And we're focusing more on the responsibility of the user. And whether the user is a consumer, a small business, an enterprise, a government agency, a user is a user. First of all, to have a use case, you need to have a business case.
Right.
Every use case should start with, why are we doing this? What's right. The benefit?
You know, what comes top of mind, and please correct me, course correct me, both of y'all, are y'all more or less like Gartner? Because I know Gartner, they put out the best platform for this, high, medium, low, leader, lagger, blah, blah, blah. That is not what y'all are doing, just for clarification.
No, we're not. We could evolve to that, but we're not
a rating company.
We're not. You don't have to pay us to get a rating from us. I'm treason.
So a company or can bring their in-house dev AI, bring it to live fire round training. you put it through the stressors, the whole no win scenario, and you develop custom training.
Yeah.
And then everyone is apprised. And then they leave with individual team score.
Yes, they do.
And group team score.
Yes, they do. They do. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I don't want to give it away too much because I actually would really love to have people actually show up for the workshop. But yes, there's a group exercise where you come up with a score, but there's actually an individual one where you have to go fact check what the AI system is telling you.
Okay. Great. Great. We'll keep a high level. Sign up. And I'm going to pivot here, Kathy. I got to get you in on it because on this conversation, we're talking about the chaos. And Ty was breaking down the necessity of the framework. And this is, please forgive me now, be kind. I'm looking at what he was saying in his soliloquy where he was talking about high intelligence without high coordination. People talk about artificial intelligence, oh, it's supposed to be super smart and all this, but we haven't done coordination? That's kind of what I'm hearing. All this money and investment and revenue is going into it, but we having such low coordination. Do you, and let me get to my question here for you. Do you agree or not agree that governance is actually a weapon?
Governance is more like our conscience in Project Cerebellum. It helps with the guide rails and using, shall we say, your cerebellum instead of your frontal lobe.
Yeah.
Difference being with the frontal lobe, it's all about dopamine and the instant gratification factor. And I'm going to create this system because I can do it. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I'm going to create this system and move forward. Where Project Cerebellum and using the team score, we bring in the questions of governance and measuring and managing what you're creating. Mm. So we're looking at you scoring yourself on your own governance as well as measuring and managing what you're doing.
Nice. So the company can prove or not prove that the AI is safe and that it will win and that the company will not be regulated out of existence. Now, using the safety belt analogy, that regulation is the seatbelt. It must be a three-point harness crossing across a person's body into a mechanism that clicks for safety restraint, the minimum viable product. I don't want to demonetize it to a minimum viable product, but when you look at return on investment, talk to some of that C-suite language that executives look for when evaluating products.
Exactly. And we've already seen how AI can disrupt the C-suite level. We've seen heads roll, people losing jobs because an AI did something that was unintentional and they paid the ultimate consequence for it.
Kathy, you talking about one of my favorite topics. I want to scratch this itch. It's my show, so I'm going to scratch it here briefly. It is of my opinion, this is of Dr. Floyd's opinion, that the new CEOs are the CIOs. If you're going to live by the AI, live by the tech, die by the tech, the CIOs have the ultimate command and control. CIOs, this is your opportunity to restructure your pay packages. You are, in my opinion, CEOs.
I would venture to say you're pretty much spot on. When I was trained to be a CIO, I learned I not only have to know the network and all the IT and the technology of what's going into the business, but I have to know the business. I have to know what the business is, what we're trying to achieve with the business, what the business systems are, and everything about the business so that I can better plug in the technology.
Yeah, this is me, Dr. Floyd again. This is my opinion. I believe it is easier for a CIO to scale up to a CEO instead of vice versa. I think the hurdles are just too vast and too wide. I mean, how AI is disrupting everything and how results are now pinned to heads rolling. I know CIOs, my heart go out to you. I wouldn't have your job for the world. I don't want your job. I don't want to be responsible and be up at night worrying about, have we got breached? Has an AI system harmed someone? Did we let something agentic loose in all this chaos? And that we, because we wanted to focus on profit, we released a minimum viable product, just the chaos. So this is going to segue us into our next conversation. We're going to talk about choice, collapse, or control. Now, I'm going to turn the heat up a little. We talked about the chaos just a few minutes ago. Now, we're going to talk about the choice, collapse, or control, binary. One or two, or zero or one, when we're talking about AI. So let's play this out. Kathy, I'm going to pick on you a little bit, and I'm not going to pick on you, my friend. I'm going to challenge you a little bit. Kathy, just imagine that a company in 2026 ignores the choice. They run naked models. They just out here running and gunning. No balance. Nothing. What happens when the lawsuits hit? What happens when the models hallucinate at crucial intervals? Walk us through that death spiral.
When a company or an agency goes out and creates something and it doesn't do what it's supposed to or goes rogue, you lose trust. And trust has to be equated with the agency, the organization. Otherwise, it loses credibility. And it loses the customer base and it loses the money, the dollars.
Yeah.
So I say intelligence is abundant, but trust is scarce.
Can you say that again?
Intelligence is abundant, but trust is scarce. And once an organization or agency loses trust, it's nearly impossible to get back.
That's some good wisdom.
Yeah. Like I said, death spiral would look like creating something, not taking the risk management into consideration, not taking the customer base in consideration, moving forward too fast, having backdoors or problems with the tool, and then you lose the people, you lose the profit, you lose responsibility because the CFOs and the CEOs usually are the ones that get fired. Times the CIOs too.
Yeah.
Once you start going down that slippery slope, it's hard to regain your balance and the trust of everybody.
Trust is very important, right? Let's talk about the employment market. That's just the immediate thing that comes top of mind. A lot of trust is now eroded. Amazon, Microsoft, and various other companies making those announcements and laying off. And then the federal government, the way they went about, shook up GovCon and then contracts and restructures. Trust is a scarce commodity right now. And I'm seeing that spill over into AI, naming some companies. And I'm not picking. I'm an observer of the market. And I'm looking at it from a holistic view of trying to decipher the market for my listeners and for my viewers, that when I look at the market, I look at companies, you have your first movers, right? And then you have your secondary movers, right? And then I look at it and I see OpenAI and at the speed that they're moving and the revenue and the building. And then I see everyone else caught up in the wake. I developed a protocol for my listeners and for everyone. It's the LEAC protocol. And I talk of LEAC, it's LEAC. I'm not gonna get into the details, but you can find it. But essentially is that we're trying to secure each one of those areas when it comes to chips, arbitrage, energy, and cost. You have to be a master of those four things, right, in this market. And the things that are moving, they're moving so fast. In summation, Kathy, you painted a great picture of negligence and capability. You painted a great picture of the legal and the operational fallout of running ungoverned AI. It's not a glitch, and I agree, that the company doesn't have an exit and an entry point. In my opinion, I'm looking at once you get in the AI game, it's like this thing of ours. Once you're in, there's no out. There's no escape. People need to understand the risk that everyone is involved in. But that's why I'm of the cautionary side. Before you deploy the AI, and I'm agreeing, before you deploy the AI, holistic view that Ty was talking about and seeing the pros and cons. Hey, developers, hey, architects, get your head out the sand, right? And let's take a hard look at what you're programming. Let's look at the fallout. Ty, you have anything to add?
Thank you, Dr. Floyd. Everything Kathy said really resonates with me. Like, every CIO that I've worked for as a CISO, I've made sure that we include trust in our vision and our mission statement. Sometimes both, either vision or mission, but in some cases in both. Or trustworthy. Yeah, trust or trustworthy. One of the ways we demonstrate trust in our industry is to adopt best practices and standards. So no matter what industry you're in, there's a CIS top 20 controls. It used to be called the top 20 critical controls. I think now they're down to 18. So we've applied the same thing to our trusted AI model framework. We actually have a top 20, but those top 20 are based on high profile incidents. Use ChatGPT for a case law that didn't really exist. So ChatGPT produced a case law that was just fully made up. And they won the case. The judge found out this case law didn't exist, revised their decision, and eventually that lawyer got disbarred. That was more of a policy issue and lack of AI risk awareness. They should have known that, hey, any output from ChatGPT should be fact checked, should be validated.
Trust but verify.
Trust but verify. Don't blindly trust. A lawyer actually blindly trusted ChatGPT as an authority. Not to pick on it, ChatGPT, any LLM, the same thing could happen with any Gen AI or LLM system. So we have these 20 controls that are based on real-world AI incidents, and we're actually going to be expanding the list of those incidents in our next revision at the end of April. But currently, we capture 12 critical ones. In TAME 3.0, we have 12 incidents, and those 12 incidents map to 20 controls. So there are 6 dozen controls within our trusted AI model, 72, if my math is correct. But we only pick 20 that you must have. If you want to earn that trust, for every AI use case, you need to assess your use case against those 20. That's the minimum. I almost see it as like the 3-point seatbelt. If you want to do the 5 points, which is the 72 controls, good, even better. But start with the 20, because that trust is very key. Because in our trusted AI model, trust is one of, it's in the heart of it. ISO 42001, ISO 24048 are really focused on trust. How do you earn trust for an AI system? And we've obviously included those in our trusted AI model. So that would really get to the heart of it. I'll call it the baseline, that as a CISO, I want to make sure my business users, and maybe even my developers, assess themselves against, as they're building the systems, as they're putting them into operation or production, they have to at least use this 20 controls as a check of where they are from a risk management standpoint. And the other thing we do is we actually predict if you're going to have an AI incident. Based on your score, we can tell you whether you have a low probability or a very high probability of having an AI incident. That doesn't mean you stop the project. It just means you proceed with caution. And you obviously would have a plan to fix those gaps. Because there's no 100%. No matter what you do, you still have to take some risks. But ultimately, it's about giving the community a tool to determine what risk they're willing to take. And obviously, the risk has to be commensurate with the organization's risk appetite, as well as their risk tolerance. It may not be your job as a CISO to determine whether you can accept the risk. It may be down to the senior leadership, but it could even be the CEO or the board that helps decide that. But at least you have a tool to tell you where you are on that journey.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I'm going to now be patient. And I'm going to make y'all wiggle in the seat here, because I'm going to unpack it. I was listening very actively. What I keep hearing, and I'm going to tie it into some language Kathy is familiar with, what I keep hearing is rules of engagement. Here are the scenarios. and then here are the rules of engagement. Now, looking from an outsider's perspective, I'm not a field marshal, Colonel Kathy. I'm not in the live fire rounds, live out here, seeing about the information that's going out and seeing the fallback, kickback from harmful AI, agentic AI, bad decisions in the boardrooms and in the front lines. I'm getting to my point. What I'm seeing in technology is the lack of overarching control. You brought up a point about the attorney. The attorneys, when they get their law degree and they pass the bar, they take an oath. The same thing with medical doctors. They take an oath. What I'm seeing in the IT industry and the tech industry, a lack of overarching. Now, I get it. I get it that AI is the new industry, is the new revolution, is the new frontier, just as the Industrial Revolution. Some can argue that this is the new revolution. And in the Industrial Revolution, there were no controls to try to grow the industry. And eventually, after time and experience, controls came in. And I'm going to point out one in particular, child labor laws. There are some countries that still violate it. But when we're talking about developing an industry, everything is moving so fast, speed, and scale. Kathy, I remember you saying that the time window of speed, or was I'm trying to close the gap
speed
from
scale
on scale, right? Close from 10 to under 5 years.
Yes, AI is running faster than we expected, it's learning faster than we had anticipated. So, you really need in your organization to look at the risk and the responsibility. And who's going to be in charge of that? Again, it's about tapping on the brakes, making sure the guardrails are in place so that you have balance in what you're trying to achieve. Having everybody in the C-suite involved up front on the same sheet of music. And as companies are going forward and adopting AI tools, it's not just about plugging in a new tool. It's also about changing how your teams work together. And companies or agencies need to build an AI adoption plan with what steps to take before introducing an AI tool, while introducing it, to ensure success. And then what are you expecting to really get out of it? It really needs to be a study and a plan that everybody is on the same sheet of music.
Just like the same thing as a disaster plan that they can physically touch that. Here it is. Here's the protocol.
PACE stands for primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency. So with AI, you have to think about all those steps and what's going to happen with the tools. It involves duplicating critical components, looking at your data, looking at your models, the infrastructure, and ensuring continuous, reliable operations and resilience. Mm-hmm. In the military, for example, if you're looking at the networks and communication, we have the primary network. So say JWICS in the military. Then your alternate might be your email for communication. Then there might be satellite phones for your contingency and backup. And then there's emergency, which if everything goes down, are the satellites still working? You can do satellite messaging, or you can even get somebody to get in the car and go deliver your message. Mm-hmm. So you need to look at all those steps when you're looking at AI systems.
Awesome. Everyone, this is why it's important. We have the executive and we have the technical. We have the architect and then we have the policy. And everyone is vertical, fully aligned. And we're hearing both sides of the conversation. And we're seeing the unifier, the tool, the TAME score, the unifier, right? You have the framework of the institute and the mission. Everyone's looking downfield together, using the football analogy. When we're looking at having the plans, and Ty gave us the checklist. Now I want to, before we close out the show, call to action. What is important for the audience, for those on Omaha Beach, dealing with AI, what's the call to action? Ty, what would you say the call to action is for your fellow architects out there?
I would say, do something. Take the first step. And the first step could just be as simple as 3 clicks. Go to projectcerebellum.com. Sign up for the TameScope tool itself. We actually have a gamification of the Tame framework. So we have a game you could actually play. And in that game, it's almost like a tabletop exercise that you do for a business continuity plan or disaster recovery plan or incident response plan. So it combines all those three things without giving too much away. But it's a tabletop exercise that you can play, and it's going to present several scenarios, and you're going to go from level 1 to level 4. And based on what you decide, it's going to tell you, hey, these are the options of your decision, and you pick 1 of 3 or 4. It'll give you a score, but it'll rate you based on customer satisfaction, financial performance, reputation. It's a very interesting game. So the first time I played it, I actually thought I was going to have a perfect score. But it rated my financial performance. I didn't build it, thankfully. I would have built it differently because I'm a purist. It actually said,
all right, sure.
From a financial performance standpoint. And I'm like, now I understand why I haven't made a lot of money doing what I do. So I made the best ethical decisions, but my financial performance for the company. And I'm like, thank God I don't own this company that I just assessed. They really suck. They went, I think they were like 6%. It started at 50%. And by the time I made all those decisions, financial performance dropped to 6%. So doing the right thing does cost money. That's really what the game shows you. But it may cost you money, or you may lose some money, but it eventually is going to benefit your organization. That's really what we're trying to do. Like, putting those guardrails on, thinking that not making AI governance an afterthought initially may slow you down a little bit, but eventually, while the others are like using that 200 card doing 200 miles, while the others are crashing around you, you're still going. And when it's time to stop or to slow down, your brakes work.
GTA. Grand Theft Auto for AI. Right. So right. The makers of GTA, yes. Call Ty so y'all can integrate the TAM score into GTA.
Would love to have you on board.
That'd be totally awesome. Thank you for that CTA and for the insight. Kathy, for policy leaders and CEOs and the C-suite execs, what are they facing? What do you feel the CTA for your peer group?
I would say it's all about the policy and the regulations. You got to have the guide rails so that you don't lose your job, essentially. Stay within the guide rails. So you need to meet those regulatory standards. That's how you stay alive. That's how you keep trust in your organization. So if you apply the guide rails for data resilience, modeling, infrastructure, redundancy, that's how you safeguard your organization. We are the gatekeepers. You know, we want to keep the company going. We want to keep the organization going, and we want to keep the products working correctly so that they aren't a danger. There is balance. There is customer satisfaction. And that's where the profits come in. Yeah. But you have to stay within the regulations.
Stay within the regulations. Stay in the guardrails. Make your own guardrails. Make your own protocols. Customize it. Communicate with each other in the C-suite. Have empathy with each other. Give everyone the benefit of the doubt. Say, I'm getting on that holistic stuff. Part on the institute, there, the name, part of the, when I was working at Georgetown, I really learned a lot about curis personalis, care for the whole person. It is the Jesuit way of governance and of community. And I really learned a lot from that. It really helped me in dealing in my professional life and personal life. My wife said, you change your tactics I said, yeah, I went to SWAT school, special weapons and tactics, right? 20 years of marriage, I got to switch it up on you. Can't keep it the same. Coming to a close here, with all hearts and minds clear, I want to say this. Everyone, you have two choices. Two choices. It's binary. You can continue to build fast and pray that nothing breaks, or you can build with a nervous system. One path leads to liability. The other path leads to authority. If you want to survive the next 24 months in this AI assault, you need to understand this Project Cerebellum. Thank you, Ty. Thank you, Colonel.
Thanks for having us.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Study the mission, study the vision, implement the controls. Don't be a casualty of your own inventory. This is Dr. Floyd, signing off.